Welcome everybody to the May 20th, 2018 workshop, Forever Abstinent, the CA How Way. I'm Suzanne E., the facilitator. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity.
Grant me the serenity.
To accept the things I cannot change. Courage.
To change the things I can.
And with the wisdom to know the difference, thy will, not mine, be done. Okay, so this workshop will run 2 hours. We're going to go over the Forever Abstinent booklet. We'll have questions after each speaker, and hopefully everybody has their latest edition of the Forever Abstinent booklet. It's so important to have that because information does change. The next change will be, I believe, 2019. Okay, so our first speaker is Susan M. from Oakland, and we have a timekeeper. How would you like your time, Susan?
So we're allowing 15 minutes total, including the questions, is
20,
that right?
20, I think. If needed.
Okay, I haven't timed myself. Let's say I'm going to speak for 10 minutes, so give me a 3-minute warning when I approach that 10 minutes, or at 7 minutes.
Okay.
Hey, B, you got that?
Yes, so give you a warning, 3 minutes left for 10 minutes.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Okay, everybody please be muted, me included, and timekeeper. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you. Hi, I am Susan. I'm a compulsive eater, and we are speaking today, doing this workshop on the Forever Abstinent guidelines. And I'm starting with the beginning of the book, looking at pages 1 through 12. And the first part, pages 1 through 3, are looking at the history of CEA How. I'm not going to touch on any pieces of that history, but I find both the history of AA and certainly the history of CHOW fascinating, and this just gives us a very brief overview of how CEA How came to be. And then I'm going to move on to pages 5 and 6, and these are the basics about the CEA How program. And I'm just going to highlight parts of what is noted in these two pages. So at the top of the page, see your healthcare professional before starting the CEA How food plan. Get a sponsor. To be abstinent, we're weighing and measuring all our food. In preparing to go to a restaurant, a conference, or a meal at a friend's home, call ahead and ask what will be available. Many members do choose to bring their own food. Don't skip or combine meals. Even if a food is on the CEA How food plan, if it creates cravings for you, eliminate it. Until you reach your maintenance weight, you only, you're offered the instruction to only weigh yourself once a month. In cooking your food, you can bake, boil, broil, roast, or grill, and use nonstick pans and sprays. If you're using a prepared food, read the labels. Flour and sugar must be fifth or below on the ingredients list. When in doubt, leave it out. Contact your sponsor or other trusted fellow when you have questions about food choices. And finally, write down your meal plan daily, including the food choices and the amounts. Make changes to that daily plan only after consulting your sponsor. So those are the basics on abstinence in this food plan. On page 7, it's devoted to medical abstinence. Any adaptations to the CEA How food plan must come from a healthcare professional who understands the addictive nature of the disease. Changes must be consistent with the program, including weighing and measuring all food and abstaining from sugar, flour, and quantities. Modifications must be written down using the form on the bottom of page 7 and discussed with your sponsor. And then moving on to pages 8 through 9, there are three items on those two pages. The first is exercise. Well, it's not required. This booklet does recommend recommend exercise as a way to reset our metabolic timepiece while relying on a professional to help us determine what the right amount of exercise will be. And keeping an awareness of the addictive component that exercise may present to us. Moderation is the key. And with regard to meditation, it's also recommended as a way to learn to listen to the still, quiet voice within. The final note on page 9 recognizes the need for working the 12 steps to stay abstinent. And then finally, on pages 10 through 12, there's a letter from the World Service Organization with regard to questions about the food policy. So the letter starts by noting the threefold recovery of physical, emotional, and spiritual growth, relief from from obsession with food, happens by working the 12 steps and the 12 tools of CEA How. The letter goes on to say that by addressing specific questions about food, the World Service Organization had concerns that it would reinforce the obsession with food rather than directing the compulsive eater toward all aspects of recovery. So instead of answering specific food questions, WSO redirects the member to the Forever Abstinent booklet and working with your sponsor. A sponsor may wish to check with his or her sponsor and then go on up the food chain if the question doesn't feel like it's able to be answered by an individual. And then decisions are made between the sponsor and the sponsee based on the Forever Abstinent booklet and they highlighted this, and a spirit of abstinence. The letter goes on to say that if we are too intent upon a certain food that we or our sponsor finds questionable, we're better off to just eliminate it. If we ask why, we are generally not looking for an answer, but rather for permission to do it our way. The letter goes on to say questions regarding religious practice or medical need. We then refer to Tradition 10, which says that we have no opinion on outside issues. An individual is encouraged to turn to their religious leader, medical professional, and sponsor, as well as for the Forever Abstinent booklet, to make a decision. And finally, the letter ends by saying, the ultimate authority on abstinence is a loving God who grants us the spirit of abstinence. Our abstinence is for our own recovery. It is between us, our sponsor, the Forever Abstinent booklet, and our higher power. Recovery is a mutual gift between us and our higher power. So I normally don't read when I'm presenting at a workshop, but I felt like thank you so much. I just wanted to highlight the specifics that were in these first 12 pages, and that is what I prepared. I'm happy to ask and answer any questions that there are.
Thank you, Susan. We're going to open it up for questions. And what I failed to mention is this is a workshop, so we are allowed to talk about food, so food will be mentioned here. Are there any questions for Susan? It's star 6 to unmute. Please be brief and to the point. Any questions on what Susan has shared on? All right. Well, there are no questions, so our next speaker is Susan C. from New York. Susan, are you there?
Yes, I am. I'm here.
How would you like your time?
For the timer, for B, if I go to 10 minutes, can you give me a heads up at 10 minutes, please?
Okay, so when 10 minutes are up, you want me to tell you 10
time.
Minutes are up? Time?
Yes,
okay.
Please.
Okay.
Time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. There's more. She can have more, but she just needs to know it's 10 minutes.
Okay.
Sure. Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Susan.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm Susan. I am a compulsive eater. The section that I'll be talking about and working from is Section 3 in the Forever Abstinent book, and it starts on page 13, and it goes through to page 18. And that would be in the latest printing, which it says printed July of 2017, revised July of 2016. And I know it's been mentioned before, but it is important, and I realized that too in these past couple of weeks, that it's important to, for us to have the latest copy of the Forever Abstinent book. I have a lot of Forever Abstinent books. I've been in CHOW since 2006. But important, the first 30 days. What I'd like to say first is the slogan, Keep It Simple, which we hear a lot in recovery. I believe it applies to the first 30 days. And the second thing that I would say at the beginning of my talk is for me to keep in mind, always keep in mind that the food plan is not a diet, it is a food plan. And this recovery is, it's a spiritual solution, not a diet solution. But because the food plan and the Forever Abstinent book, I believe we see it, I know I did, you know, as one of the important pieces of our CHOW literature, and it is, you know, it's like, I need the food plan, let me get the food plan, and it is important. But I seem to always need to remind myself and to remind others that the food plan is one of the seven tools, the CHOW Abstinence Food Plan. I think I'll follow suit with what our first speaker did and really go page by page and just go over some of the things that I think are important. I highlighted them when I was going through. And it is getting started. The first 30-day plan is meant for those of us that are just coming into program and using and being introduced to the food plan, and for people who are returning. And there may be some gray area about when to ever go back to the first 30-day food plan, but I think it's important for me to just put the eraser on the blackboard and just almost pretend for myself that this is the first time that I'm ever seeing a copy of the first 30 days and look at it with fresh eyes. And it talks about on page 14, the food plan is basically this, one protein selection for breakfast, one fruit selection, and an optional teaspoon of fat, and an optional 3 tablespoons of bran, raw or unprocessed bran. And that's breakfast. And lunch is one protein selection, 2 vegetable selections, and 1 teaspoon of fat, optional. And for dinner, 1 protein selection, 3 vegetable selections, up to 2 tablespoons of dressing, 1 teaspoon of fat, optional. And then it refers right away, and I'm sure if you're anything like me, you go right away to Appendix A. And somebody else on the panel today will be discussing Appendix A, but I wouldn't blame you if you turned to Appendix A right now just to take a look at it. The idea about the foods for the first 30 days, in my mind, again, it's to keep it simple. And I have a sponsor already. My sponsor has given me, or I've gotten a copy of this Forever Abstinent book, and I always need to keep it handy. I've been in program for over 11 years, and I need the Forever Abstinent book handy. I get questions about it from sponsees, and I have questions about it. It's almost as if, how can I forget, you know, what this is? But I do, and other people have questions, and since I am a compulsive eater, it's understandable that that maybe things slip my mind, or accidentally, or maybe even on purpose. On page 14, I highlighted that this beginning food plan, which is, you know, the bare bones food plan, and it's for weight loss, and it's for also detoxing from some of the things that I've eaten obsessively, compulsively, sugar and flour. But it does say that this is the beginning of a number of surrenders. And it's not easy. I would never say that it's easy to start off on this very elementary food plan. But it is the basis for our food plan, and it's the basis for being abstinent. And what's important is the statement in Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, how I am committed to abstaining from quantity, sugar, and flour. And as it was said before, and it will be said again, it's the discipline of weighing and or measuring our food. And the sugar rule is given right away. Sugar in any of its forms must be listed fifth or lower to qualify for use in our eating plan. And as many times as I say that and I read it, I still need to check labels. I'm probably a compulsive label reader, but it's very important. And sometimes a food that might have been abstinent, such as, well, I'm not going to go into foods that much, but it could turn out to have a brand name where all of a sudden sugar appears in the first four ingredients. So sugar in any of its forms must be listed fifth or lower to qualify. And I liked reading this explanation because it's, what's wrong with flour? What do you have against flour? But on page 15, it writes, since flour and saliva combine to form a simple sugar, we also use the sugar rule when it comes to dealing with flour. In other words, flour, any kind of flour, must be fifth or lower on a product's list of ingredients. It's just too processed. The flour and saliva combine to form a simple sugar. The optional items in the first 30 days are beloved fats, and I say that, you know, because they are, to me, they are anyway. And breakfast, lunch, and dinner, 1 teaspoon of fat, and it's optional. It says here on page 15, you should infer healthy fat. It does not specifically say butter or margarine, a healthy fat. And this is where it's important to work with your sponsor and maybe with your sponsor's sponsor and so on. It's a teaspoon of whatever a healthy fat is, and you can work that out, and I have worked that out. I have also obsessed about it and argued about it and many other things, but I have come to a healthy, peaceful place about healthy fats. I also, before I leave the topic of fats, I myself would encourage the use of fats in the first 30 days. It does say optional, but that's something that It would be person to person and case by case. This is a bare bones food plan, and for me, I think that fats are good for us. They're healthy for us, and if we're starting to work a spiritual program, we're learning what it means to, to be guided by spiritual rules, I've started to learn to eliminate fear, fear of this food or that food, within reason. The same thing goes for the bran. We may use
time.
Up to, oh, thank you. Okay, I better rush it a little bit. We may use up to 3 tablespoons of bran at breakfast, and I find that to be a very healthy suggestion. Salad dressing is next on page 15, and it's 2 tablespoons of salad dressing. The same thing goes for dressing. It's an important ingredient. It doesn't say optional. It's up to 2 tablespoons. And look at the labels and make sure the sugar is 1/5 or lower. And just to go on to the next page, I'll move on a little bit. The condiments, keep it simple, but, we do have a good long list of condiments in Appendix A. It does say that, not to go overboard about them, we limit the use of condiments to a total of 1/2 cup per meal to help keep our meals in check. And also the sugar-free items are allowed. It talks about proteins, vegetables, and mixing selections. And the Appendix A gives a good choice of proteins, a very good choice of vegetables and fruits, and there's also an explanation of mixing. That's not always easy in the first 30 days or when you're even returning. I'd go back to keep it simple and give yourself a break while you're trying to answer questions, shop for food, find time to prepare food. But you'll find a lot of the choices in Appendix A. The fruits, 1 fruit a day, and that would be at breakfast. And we're trying to avoid the phenomenon of craving or even a sugar bounce with certain fruits. So that's something that you'll be noticing and getting to know as you get to know your body and get to know what it feels like to be abstinent. And if you're new or if you're returning. The only beverages that are here to be used are sugar-free beverages, coffee, tea, and water. And you can also use part of your protein allotment if you wanted to use milk in your coffee. And that would be 1/2 of a protein choice. And that would be just for use in your coffee or tea. But the milk would be used to be added to your beverage. You're also allowed chewing gum if that's something that you think can help you. I've learned over time that my mouth is suddenly filled with a huge gob of chewing gum, and so I don't do that unless I'm having trouble and my ears are popping if I'm on an airline flight or something like that. So this is the basic food plan, it says. You will make most of your food decisions with the advice and guidance of your sponsor. But always, this Forever Abstinent book is always here, and the next edition of it will probably be 2019, as Suzanne has said. Thank you. That's me covering Section 3. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you, Susan. Are there any questions for Susan covering the first 30 days? Star 6 to unmute.
Hi.
It's Dave.
Oh, I heard
Go ahead,
Dave second, and I heard someone else first. Who was that?
Adele.
Adele, go ahead, Adele, you first.
Okay, I don't have a question. I just have a comment. When I was, I think it was last year when I went to Alabama, I went to a Trader Joe's to buy something I had just bought maybe 2 days or 3 days before I left California. And it's like, wow, you know, it was the same thing, same brand and everything, same label on the front. And it's like, something is, you know, this feels different. And I looked on the back, and it has sugar within the first 5 ingredients. And so it's like, oh, my God, you know, did they change the ingredients? And so when I got back to California, I looked at the ingredients, and it wasn't there. So what I'm thinking is that they, you know, by being shipped from California to Alabama, they needed to put the sugar in there to preserve it. So it was the same label and everything, but the ingredients was different in a different state. So you might want to check things no matter what, because that kind of really freaked me out. So thanks for letting me share that.
Thank you, Adele. You know, you're so right. I'm totally blind, and so I depend upon other people reading the labels, but I have them read the labels once a month, because all of a sudden something that I was buying has changed, and I can't trust that it stays the same. Dave, would you like to ask a question?
Yes, please. After the first 30 days food plan for fat, I can have 1 tablespoon of mayonnaise?
Dave, hi, it's Susan. Thanks for your question. I'm dealing with the first 30 days, and then the next person will deal with after the first 30 days. But it's for the first 30 days, it's a teaspoon of healthy fat, no matter what it is. And then, you'll get that covered after the first 30 days. So stay tuned.
I think it's for maintenance only. Okay.
Yeah, stay tuned for that. Yeah.
Sure.
Susan, there was a question someone asked me, do we ever start doing the first 30 days over and over again, or do we just do that once, even if we have slipped? Someone asked me that.
Yeah, that's a good question. I was looking ahead where it's described in the maintenance section about slips or gaining of weight and to go back to the food plan after the first 30 days, my answer would be to not do that. But I think it's between your sponsor and yourself. But I would just warn and argue about the diet mentality. And I've heard people say I'm things have happened to me and I'm just going back to that first 30-day food plan, and they've been in program for years. And I would just say, why? Because, after the first 30 days, it's just about the same, and you don't have to add the grains. It really is between you and your sponsor. So that's my answer, a little bit vague, but I would say not to. And maybe other people on the panel have their own experience about that.
Thank you, Susan. I don't know if one of the other panelists wants to talk about that, or maybe later.
Okay.
This is Betty, a compulsive eater. I have a question.
Go ahead, Betty.
So unfortunately, I have an older version of the book, but it says 1 teaspoon of fat optional, but it does not mention what type of fat. I know you had mentioned that is between you and your sponsor. The only fats they mention is in the maintenance. So does that mean whatever they have in the maintenance is not on the 30-day? And then also there's like 2 tablespoons of salad dressing in the maintenance portion, but we are allowed that in the first 30 days. So I was just wondering.
Right.
I mean,
thank you, Betty. Thanks for that question. I'll take the second part of the question first, because I know the answer. The salad dressing, we are given up to 2 tablespoons of dressing in the first 30 days. And just make sure that the sugar is listed 5th or lower. About fats, I still have not been able to get a solid grip on if a person in the first 30 days can skip ahead and look at all the maintenance fats, because there's some maintenance fats that could be a little bit wild, maybe a little bit too wild for your first 30 days or returning. One of the best ways to approach healthy fat, as it says here, we do not specifically say butter or margarine. We infer healthy fat, and that means that the fats seem to help us to go from one meal to the next, and they are optional. But for healthy fat, it might be a good idea, and if you work this out with your sponsor, to stick with some simple fats to begin with, butter, margarine, oil, and then see what happens later on. That's my answer to that.
Thank you, Susan. Any other questions?
Yeah, this is Loretta from Ohio. I do have a question.
Go ahead, Loretta.
And thanks, everybody, for your service today. On page 16, under sugar-free gelatin, it says, we also find that limiting our use of condiments to a total of 1/2 cup per meal helps to keep our meals in check. I have had I get questions every sponsee about this, and they said, well, it doesn't say we have to. So what is the panel's opinion about that?
Susan, can you start first, please?
Okay. Thanks, Loretta. I would take that very seriously, and I do take it seriously, to limit it to 1/2 cup for each meal. So if you're having 1/2 cup of gelatin, that's it. And if you want to have 1/2 cup of tomato sauce for that meal, that's it. I think that they talk about the food loopholes, and that could be a good example of that. I mean, if we do want to work this program and, be happy, joyous, and free, and abstinent, my opinion is listen very seriously to what that says about limiting the use of condiments to a total of 1/2 cup per meal.
Thank you, Susan.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions for Susan? All right, our next speaker is LB from Las Vegas, and it's *6 to unmute.
Can you hear me now? This is LB in Las Vegas.
I can hear you now. Go ahead. How would you like
right.
your time with the time?
Oh, give me a warning at like 9 minutes. That's fine.
Okay, you got that, B?
So,
thank you.
Do I say 1 minute left?
Just say 9 minutes. That's fine.
Yeah, 9 minutes.
Oh,
I'm good.
Yeah. I'm not going to be that long. So Susan did a great job in New York, and she's made my job interesting and interesting. I'll leave it at that. So my portion is after the first 30 days. After the first 30 days, the food plan changes a little tiny bit. The food plan that's listed on page 14 changes just a little bit. So they've added some things to help you with grain and starches. So the breakfast changes from 1 protein, 1 fruit, 1 teaspoon of fat optional, and it adds a grain selection optional. Lunch is still 1 protein, 2 vegetables, 1 teaspoon of fat, and grain selection optional. And dinner is 1 protein, and here's a kick. It's 2 vegetable selections, not 3, 2, up to 2 tablespoons of dressing, 1 teaspoon of fat, and 1 grain optional. And the deal is, you have a maximum of 2 grain servings a day, and if you have one of your grains at dinner, at your dinner selection, then it's 2 vegetables. Otherwise, you can have 3 vegetables at dinner. It's just kind of unusual, but it works as a plan. After the first 30 days, everybody has to deal individually to add grains or starches. And, of course, grains or starches are listed in the appendix back in the back of the book and what they are. And as I read it, grains and starches are equivalent. It could be the grains or starches. And my own personal experience is that for me, grains is a kind of a trigger food. And the quantity is not that much. And it tempts me a lot. So from my own personal plan, it's not. I'd rather have vegetables than grain. Leave it in that simple terms. Starches are corn, peas, or baked yam, sweet potato. And the grains tend to be, as mentioned before, whole grain and flour-free. And I will say, after reading this book a number of times, I'm still learning. I've been on the program for just over 9 months, and I'm still making mistakes and learning from my mistakes. The other day I bought some grain crackers. I thought, oh, my gosh, these are whole grain. It's awesome. I failed to look at the label closely to realize that there was sugar in there. So I live and learn. Can't eat those. At this point, everybody has to deal individually with the grains and when to add grains and starches. Again, whole grain flour is still flour. As you know, flour behaves just like sugar. Our bodies don't confuse it with whole grains. When in doubt, leave it out. There's comments about gradual long-term recovery. People may be unaware of changes still going on in their bodies. And this may require some fine-tuning. You have to listen, look at what you've written down, what you've eaten, and see how you feel. So if you feel hungry that day, maybe there was a cause for it. Maybe it was tied to something that you ate in the previous few meals. And I'm realizing as I'm reading this, that I don't do that myself, and I probably should. I know there's a couple of days where I've been hungry. I'm like, I should go back and make sure on my plan that what I'm eating doesn't trigger something in me 4 or 5 hours later. Finally, about maintenance, you and your sponsor, a healthcare professional, determine when you've reached a healthy weight that you may want to maintain for a healthy way of life. At this point, that's all I have to say. I'm kind of new. Obviously, I'm nervous about this presentation. This is my first time doing it, so thank you very much for letting me share.
Thank you, LB. Is there anyone who has a question about after the first 30 days?
I have a question of LB. This is Susan from New York. Thanks, LB. And just because it's probably fresher in your mind, did you start adding grains yourself right away in after the first 30 days? What was your experience?
I started adding grains to one meal only. Because I found that the quantity of grains, for traditional baked grains, is only 1 ounce. 1 ounce isn't very much. And I chose to, like, end up using the brand Triscuits because they seem to be legal. And it wasn't that, it was like four or five or six crackers. You had to weigh it. Everyone's different. But it wasn't very much. I determined for me, it didn't really change my plan any. And my brain only holds so much. And I keep the plan simple in my head. It's easier for me to remember what to do. And to me, it was just a distraction. I don't do grains all that often. I would say maybe once every 3 days. And I've gone back to corn tortillas for me. That seems to work. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Susan. Any other questions?
This is Michelle. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, Michelle.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm wondering about the grains and the starches being equivalent. Does that mean you could have a half a serving of grains and a half a serving of starches and put them together in making one serving? And then another question is there any limit to the number of times a week or a month that you can use a starch? For example, I have heard that on maintenance, one woman was under the impression that she could only have a starchy food once a week.
This is LB. This is my interpretation of reading the book, and we're all trying to work here to come to a common good. As I read it, this is one day at a time. And the plan is for one day. There's no weekly allotment of anything in this book that I'm aware of. And the other question you asked was, can you mix? In theory, there's places in the book that talks about, I know about mixing proteins. So if you get 2 ounces of this or 4 ounces of that, you want to mix, you can do 1 and 2 ounces. But to do a prorated combination, I presume that would be true. But the quantity isn't that much. And it's probably a dangerous place to be. And my suspicion is, if someone's doing that, it's like, to me, it's more confusing, it would be easier to make a mistake and break, essentially cheat the program, cheat yourself. It doesn't make sense because the quantity isn't that much. But the grains, as I read it, grains and starches are equivalent. In my book, on page 33, it talks of what they are. It's 1 ounce of this or 4 ounces of that. Starches are 4 ounces of corn or 4 ounces of peas or 4 ounces of baked yam or sweet potato. And that's it. It's pretty simple. And any other opinions? I'm just asking.
Is there anyone else on the panel that would like to address this?
Hi, this is Jan. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, Jan.
Yes.
Thank you, Jan, compulsive eater. I have my, what I have found, and I've been doing this program nearly 14 years, and what I found really works for me is to keep things consistent. And I liked it when LB said, keep it simple. Absolutely. I have to keep it simple for me, and I have to encourage my sponsees to keep it simple. If I start mixing and match, I do mix and match, but there was a point in time where I mixed and matched everything, and it drove me crazy just writing my menu and my sponsor just hearing it. I mean, it was according to the program. However, I have learned that I just need to keep it simple. And, you know, as far as, and the grains and starches are a tricky part. And so, you know, just I figure I can have, you know, one grain today and maybe I'll have my starch tomorrow. But that's the other thing that I consistent. If I'm adding a, you know, if I'm adjusting according to weight or according to whatever, what I'm adjusting is my daily menu. Like if I'm to a point where I'm adding a grain, I add the grain, or for my sponsees, I add the grain for this meal. Say I add it for lunch, but I keep it at lunch. I don't juggle it around, and I keep it consistent because my body needs to know what to accept. And this is my own personal experience. My body needs to know what to expect from my food plan, and I have been able to maintain a consistent weight for, you know, except for other reasons that I've, you know, it's adjusted itself over the years. But week to week, I maintain a consistent weight, and that's because my body knows what to expect and does receive the same nutrition every day. And that'll pass. Thank you.
Would anyone else on the panel like to?
Vegas.
Yes, go ahead, Sue.
I just wanted to add to what LB and Jan said that I agree with them. And that being said, if I eat a grain or a starch every day, I will not lose weight at the end of the month. So I go every other day, and I just look. If I'm committing my food, I look and say, okay, was this a day on which I ate grain, in which case tomorrow will be a not grain day. So I am consistent in that way. So I am consistent. I believe it's one day at a time, and yet I have to consider balancing healthy nutrition and the simplicity of the program against returning to a healthy weight.
Thank you, Sue. Yes. Yes, Adele.
Okay, I hear what the other lady said because my sponsor have me doing a starchy grain once a week, and I just got to, you know, I have, you know, write it down, and you know it's changed on Sunday, and it's, you know, sometimes it's just like, okay, did I have it? When did I have it? Got to look it up and stuff. So I don't know where she got it from, but it sounds like the person that talked about that before sound like her. My sponsor is on the same key as her, where you can only have starchy, grain once a week. And so, okay, thanks for letting me share that.
Thank you, Adele. This is Suzanne. I just like to add, when I first came into the program, my sponsor told me, starches twice a week. I don't know if that was in somewhere at one point. And then my other sponsor that has been around for 50-some years said, look, you know, starches are starch, and if you're in weight loss mode, maybe it'd be best to keep it twice a week. The other thing is, you know, some grains aren't created equal for all people. A lot of grains I don't do well on at all, and yet I have several sponsees that do very well on certain grains. So it's kind of like once you detox, you kind of have to listen to your body and with the help of your sponsor. Any other questions for LB?
Thank you, Sue. Thank you.
Okay, our next speaker, I believe, is Jan. And Jan, I don't know if you want to go ahead and read the tool line that I forgot to have someone read.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you.
This is Jan, compulsive eater, and I'm going to start out by reading tool line number one in our seven tools of See How. And it does refer to our See How abstinence food plan. Three meals daily, weighed and measured, with nothing in between except sugar-free soda, no-calorie beverages, and sugar-free gum. Food is written down, called in, and committed, so we can get on with our recovery and out of the food. It is recommended that you obtain your physician's or healthcare professional's approval before beginning your abstinence using the See How food plan. Any recommendations your physician or healthcare professional makes will be accepted. And ironically, this leads right into the maintenance program for me. It's amazing. And I'm glad I got to read that. It's a wonderful reminder. My topic is maintenance. I've been doing maintenance now for over 13 years. And I've been in program almost 14 years. And so I've seen a lot of changes. And I do have the latest edition, the latest revision of Forever Abstinent. And basically, it hasn't changed too much over the many years. If we go to page 24, it's under section 5. And it starts out with maintenance guidelines, and it gives us a description of where we as individual compulsive eaters fit into the big scheme of things as far as our height and weight and whether we're male or female. And then it gives us categories. And this is very interesting because there have been occasions that someone has shared with me, you know, if they're concerned about maintenance, say they've done maintenance in the past, and they say, I just started gaining weight as soon as I went on maintenance. You know, it just didn't work for me. And when I started in maintenance, my sponsor told me what she did was that when I was within 10 pounds of my goal weight, I added one thing. I don't remember if it was a fruit or a grain, but I added that once a day and to the same meal. And I believe it was a grain that I added. And I did that for 2 weeks. And then I, you know, weighed, and if I had continued to lose any weight, then I added something else at that point. But I added one thing at a time. And the interesting thing is I was able to add until I got to a certain point, and then I maintained, and I just stayed where I was as far as my food plan. So that's what I'm referring to under this maintenance guideline. Women, if they are a small, medium, or large, petite, medium, or tall, let's put it that way, we get our category from that, and that refers to the bottom section. And actually, I started out as a medium height person. I was 5'5", and so that put me in category B. And so I was able to choose, if you're looking at your book, it's one from each of the food groups. And now these are maximums. These are maximums that a person is allowed to have. This is what we gradually build up to as we're in the weight
learning to maintain our weight. Our body is adjusting. We may still be, we add something, one thing at a time. And what I think what I may have added next was a fruit, and I added a fruit to either lunch or dinner. And so I was having within that guideline. Unfortunately, some folks think, oh, this is what I'm allowed to have. I'm on maintenance, and so they start eating the maximum of everything. And when we talk about four fats at dinner, that's a lot of fats. And so we add one thing at a time, one fat at a time, or one protein, one ounce of protein at a time. That's where they come up with the 1 1/4 protein. That would be of rate, you know, considering 4 ounces per protein, and then that would be 5 ounces would be the 1 1/4, and so on. And again, if we add a grain to dinner, then we only do 2 vegetables with dinner. That continues throughout the whole life of the program. All right. Our transition, I pretty much fortunately, my sponsor guided me very correctly, according to what the Forever Abstinent says. Okay. And it does say if there's a weight gain over 3 pounds in a two-week period, subtract one phase. Occasionally, people's weight will change. Once we're on maintenance, we start weighing. Once we start into the maintenance transition, we start weighing once a week. And for those of us who have been scale junkies, I learned once I came into program, they said weigh once a month, and I was like, oh, right, I don't have to look at that horrible big number. But as I started to lose, I wanted to weigh, but I managed not to do it. But now I get to do it because I'm going into maintenance. But it was very enlightening to see where I was every week, and I made sure that I wrote down all those weights just to make, you know, to be my guide that I'm doing what I need to do. And this tells us how to decrease the amount of maintenance food that we're taking in. But also, when we're adding, we can add the same way, just one thing at a time. Okay. And people change. Metabolism rates vary. Some people, most of the women that I know get a little resentful because men lose weight so easily. But that's okay, but they gain it right back very easily, too. It is possible, I'm just going to read this because it's very well put, it is possible that some of the foods on this plan may create the phenomenon of craving for some of us, and it's important to work with your sponsor and eliminate any such foods. There's one food that I remember eating as a child. It came in a jar, and I just, you know, that was my trigger food because that was my comfort food back then. And I just don't have. I've learned. I tried having it, and I started craving. And so I leave that out. Okay. And we are going to go over the maintenance foods. I forgot to ask the timer to let me know when I have 10 minutes are up. Okay. In the event of a slip, if the weight gain is less than 10 pounds, follow the maintenance food program with the following adjustments. And that's to start by eliminating or cutting down to having only one fruit per day. That would be back the same way it is in the after 30 days. A maximum, this is the after 30-day plan, a maximum of 2 grains or starches. Subtract any additional fats that have been added. And the protein units, if you're taking say 1 1/4, say I'm on B, okay. If you're taking 1 1/4 proteins at lunch, then you would cut it down to 1 protein at lunch. So, and once you've reached your goal weight again, you can start adding again in the reverse of this above list, one thing at a time for, you know, every week, see how your weight is being maintained. And if you started to lose more than your goal weight, then you can start adding one thing. And just take it slowly. I figure, you know, changes that I make, I have time because I plan to be here the rest of my life. You know, and so I have time. And when I was getting frustrated with weight loss, maybe it slowed down. And I figured, I have time to do this. I'm not in any big hurry. I'm just here. And once it's gone, I don't want it back. And through the grace of God, it hasn't come back, but only because I do this diligently every day, weigh and measure. And that's the thing about maintenance. I continue to weigh and measure every day. And that's the only way it works for me. Now, as far as maintenance foods, all of the basic proteins, vegetables, fruits, condiments, starches and grains. There is a slight change in starches, and that is that white potato is not permitted. Thank you. I'm almost finished here. I'll wrap up. White potato is, if you noticed, is not listed under the basic food plan. Only yams or sweet potatoes, and that's now white potato can be used once on maintenance. Okay, so it's 4 ounces of potato, all types under starches. That's the only change in starches. Okay, and fats and oils are the big difference. When we get into maintenance. And we have to learn what works for us and what doesn't. You know, we can't just arbitrarily say, oh, I'm going to do this day and that day. And, you know, if I have on maintenance, if I'm allowed to have an optional fat at lunch on maintenance, I am allowed to have 2 tablespoons of salad dressing. But if I have 2 tablespoons of dressing at every meal, then I'm going to see a change in my weight. So I have to use my common sense. And with the help of my sponsors, Experience, Strength, and Hope, it is such a gift to have someone to help me be accountable and to help guide me through this process. You know, I may have been doing this for a long time, but my sponsor listens when I read my food to her. And she says, well, what about that? Or did you mention that? Or she listens. And I try to do the same thing for my sponsees. I listen. And but I've learned what fats and oils I can use and what ones I can't. You know, I still use the teaspoon of butter for one of my meals. That's my fat. I use that. And I use... some of the other ones, a lot of them I don't use at all because, for me, they don't work or they set up the phenomenon of craving. So I'm pretty consistent. And after all this time, I have found that I have reached... my menu has evolved. My body has changed. I've had numerous medical changes in my body. I've had to work with my doctors. I am on medical abstinence, have been, but the medical abstinence has changed also. It's not the same as it was 10 years ago. And it's not the same as it was 5 years ago. And because my body changes, I am now 5'2". So I'm in category A today. So things change. Obviously, I'm no spring chicken. So that also, age makes a difference in what my body needs. And so working closely with my sponsor, doing the weighing and measuring diligently, paying attention to the food groups and what my body can do and can't do are critical to maintaining a good healthy maintenance weight. I will pass on that. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Jan. Any questions for Jan on maintenance? And star 6 to unmute.
Hi, Adele.
Hi, Adele.
Okay, so she's saying that on maintenance you can have all types of potatoes, and it don't say once a week or twice a week, because I made a mistake. It was twice a week that she said.
No, I didn't say any time. When I'm making my menu...
No, not you said, my sponsor said. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, that's between you and your sponsor, you know,
okay.
As to what kinds, you know, and what, you know, I go with what works for me, and, you know, if my sponsor... asks me something or suggests something, then we talk it out together. You know, we work it out together.
Okay, thank you.
Thank mm-hmm. you, Adele. Any other questions? All right. Sue from Las Vegas is our next speaker.
Hi, this is Sue, compulsive eater. Can I be heard?
Yes. Is our timer still available to time for another 10 minutes?
Yes, I can do that.
Okay, thank you. Sue, B will give you a heads up when 10 minutes have passed.
Great. I may need a little more time than that.
That's fine. It's just like a heads up. That's okay.
Okay.
So
I'm going to start by qualifying. My name is Sue. I live in Las Vegas. I came in to see how when it was part of OA How in 1987. My current abstinence is 1 year and 104 days. I have an 89-pound weight release on this abstinence, and 135 pounds overall. I'm a food inventory and step sponsor, and I want to say I'm an omnivore, but about one-third to one-half of my meals are vegetarian or vegan. So I eat extensively from the food plan, and thank you for asking me to be on this workshop. The way I approach our food plan is that this is principles-based rather than rule-based. Then our principles, as far as I can discern them, are, first, we have a food plan. Second, it doesn't include flour or sugar. Third, there's a limit on quantity. We don't stuff ourselves, and we don't starve ourselves. Fourth, there's periods of time when we're not eating. Fifth, this is not a diet. We are dealing with an illness. An eating disorder. Eating disorders as a group have the highest mortality rate of any psychiatric illness. You can look up the statistics for yourself. Therefore, we must take this seriously and feed the recovery and not the illness. Sixth, I want to balance healthy nutrition and healthy weight. While I want to have full utilization of the food plan so that I have healthy nutrition, I don't want to eat the fattiest things all the time, and I don't want to diet. I don't want to be too hungry or too thin. And seventh, I try not to add unnecessary rules that aren't written in the book. I try to stick with the spirit of abstinence, as it says in that letter that was covered by Susan from New York, and stick with these principles. So Appendix A starts with equivalent measures. And what we can learn from the equivalent measures is this isn't entirely black or white. There's a range. A dry cup is slightly less than a liquid cup, and a liquid cup is often less than the weight on the scale, unless it's something that has a lot of water in it, like yogurt. So foods where you can have a quantity, for example, one apple, we all know that that could be little, like a very small apple or a crab apple, to ginormous. I've seen apples the size of melons. And then you can get a small chicken or you can get a chicken the size of a turkey. So, and then there's the question of, do you stuff the cup or do you fluff the cup? My solution is I weigh almost everything. except for my fats and my spices. And that way, I neither fluff the cup nor stuff the cup. I don't get the ginormous or the tiny of anything because that feeds my addiction. And I buy and use the Imperial spoons, and I level off the fats because I can fit a Prontosaurus on a spoon. So I avoid that by measuring and leveling it off, and believe me, it can be painful. That is the disease. So moving on to proteins, remember that this is a principle-based program, not rule-based, the spirit of abstinence here. And what does that mean? The purpose of a protein is getting protein, the building blocks of our body, I think. So if it's labeled like a protein, but it has no protein in it, it isn't a protein. And I can give you three examples. Milk. Dairy milk has 16 grams of protein. Soy milk is similar, but nut milks like almond and cashew have only about 2 grams of protein. So for me, in my food plan, I recognize that nut milks have a lot of fat and a lot of carbohydrate, but they don't have protein, so they're not a protein. Yogurts, coconut yogurt, has no protein, but lots of fat. So it might be something else, but it's not a protein. And jackfruit, which is a fruit of a tree, a literal fruit, is used sometimes by some people as a vegetarian protein, a meat filling for like tacos, but it has no protein in it and a lot of carbohydrate. So I don't use it as a protein because it has no protein, but I could, if I wanted to, use it as a fruit. For the vegetarian proteins, I'm aware that there's an ad hoc committee considering a supplement to describe these more fully for the next edition of the food plan. For example, they're going to address nutritional yeast, I believe, and meat substitutes like corn. That's Q-U-O-R-N. Stay tuned. I won't speak on this. I'm not an expert. I should tell you how I approach new foods. If I'm thinking about introducing something into my food plan, I am not a registered nutritionist, but I use the principles approach, and if I'm considering a new food, I research nutrition using sources like the nutrition guidelines published by the FDA, that's online. I talk to other CHEL members that I think are knowledgeable, and I talk to my sponsor. And if it's okay, and I'll eat it in the quantity recommended. But if it's triggering to me, or if I'm in doubt about it, I leave it out until I can figure it out. I don't eat anything triggering, even if it's in the food plan. So those are my principles for dealing with foods that are not listed in the food plan. So going back to proteins, cheese, the book says curd cheese and aged or hard cheese. This can be a little confusing. There are three types of cheese. First, fresh cheese is curd cheese, typically coagulated using an acidic element like vinegar or briefly soured. Second, aged cheese, and those are cultured with bacteria, molds, yeasts, and include the hard cheeses. And the third type of cheese is junk cheese, processed American Velveeta-type cheeses. They're like Cheese Whiz, they're cheese in a can. They're not cheese. They sometimes have little or no dairy in them. And we're steering away from the junk cheeses. Do not eat the junk cheeses, because they're not really nutritious cheese. They're not proteins that are nutritious for you. Fresh cheese, it can be loose like cottage cheese or pressed like farmer's cheese or feta. It's still 4 ounces, regardless of the fat content. And aged cheeses are 2 ounces, except for non-fat aged cheese is 4 ounces. I'd like if this was more clear in the book, and I'm going to submit a proposal that this be clarified. For fatty meats, there's a lot of interest right now in ketogenic, no sugar, no grain diets. They're very fashionable now. So we have a lot of no sugar, more processed meats. It's really easy to get no sugar ham and bacon. But I suggest when you're looking at fatty meats, don't feed the disease by eating 4 ounces of very fatty meats regularly. I will eat sugar-free bacon, for example, but I limit myself to half an ounce or an ounce very occasionally, because for me it's easy to go to town on things like that. For splitting proteins, I often have something like 4 ounces of beans and an ounce of hard cheese, or 2 ounces of paneer, which is a curd cheese from India. But I don't get more complicated than that, because I can, like everybody was talking about, if you make it too complicated, you can get confused, and you could eat too much or too little protein. So I suggest keeping it simple, even if you split your proteins, not going above 2 ingredients. They list soy nuts, and that brings me to my number one recommendation for people who travel in this program or who commute long distances. This program has to be portable or it won't work. So put together an emergency kit.
And Time?
Okay, I'll probably be another 5 minutes.
Okay.
Keep it in your car. Cans of protein, vegetables, fruit, soy nuts, so that you're never without it if stuck in traffic, a breakdown, or called away somehow. You always have food. Get a traveling scale and collapsible cups and pack those and your cans of food in your luggage, because it's been my experience that TSA will take away your canned chicken and your canned food. Fruits, I always make a varied fruit salad at breakfast of at least 3 fruits, and I weigh it carefully, except papaya. I will eat half a medium. And I don't eat sugar-free all-fruit spread because it's painful to me and triggering as to the quantity. Why do that to yourself? And I don't eat dried fruit for the same reason. But, of course, you'll want to talk to your sponsor. It does list quantities of fruits that you can have. And, you know, look at the quantities, stick to the quantities, try to pick a medium-range fruit. Don't go little, don't go huge. Pears. When this food plan was first published, pears were left off, and there was a huge controversy as to why they were left off, with some saying, if it's not on there, don't eat it, and some saying, it's not different than an apple, so eat it. My thought on this, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of fruits not on this list, so do what I do if you wish. Research the nutrition by going to the FDA website, talking to other CEHO members, talk it over with your sponsor, and proceed accordingly. For vegetables, this is a very limited list. There are thousands of vegetables, and I challenge you to join me in developing at least 5 abstinent recipes for every vegetable in the vegetable section of the grocery. I'm going to give you a good example of vegetables that are not included on the list. Chayote is in the genus Setium. So it's in the same genus with squash and cucumbers, but it's not either a squash or a cucumber. Every part of chayote is edible, and the fruit is eaten like a zucchini. The vine and leaves, you can eat them like greens, but how about the root? The root is starchy, and it's used in a South American culture like a potato. The answer is, I don't know yet, and I'm having a hard time finding reliable nutrition information about it. Because it's starchy doesn't mean you can't eat it. Winter squash, sunchokes, Jerusalem artichokes, they're starchy, but they're a vegetable because they're not that starchy. Some vegetables like English peas, corn, and sweet potato, they're a starch. And some vegetables like potato, you can't eat them until maintenance. Why? Because they're very starchy, they have a high glycemic index, and they're very triggering. So I don't eat chayote root, even though I can get it in the local stores, because I haven't figured it out yet. And when I do figure it out, then I'll talk to my sponsor about it. Snap peas, here's another example. They're not in the list, but they're a cross between English peas and Chinese peas. They have the same nutrition as Chinese peas. You eat them in the pod, and so I treat them as Chinese peas. Now moving on to condiments. The principal, there are several that are limited in quantity on the list, but they're all in principle limited in quantity because we abstain from quantity. So if you're drinking gallons of vinegar, that's not abstinent. And finally, for the flour rule, I get a lot of whys, and the best why I can figure out is that people get PhDs in food science to hook us on food, and the principle of vanishing caloric density is the number one tool of food addiction. And what is that? They grind the ingredients of food so finely that they will melt in your mouth. That includes flours from grains, but flours from beans and vegetables and fruits as well. If they melt in your mouth, you will have the sensation that you haven't eaten, and you will be triggered to eat. So this is why the flour rule exists, because we have discovered the same thing by being food addicts, that certain foods with the finely ground and reconstituted ingredients, whether they're made out of vegetables or they're made out of beans or they're made out of grains, are triggering to us. So we have discovered through our experience the same thing that PhDs have discovered by experimenting on people like us. They put together groups of people like us and experiment to see what is an addictive food, and that's the food they market.
5 minutes are up.
Okay, thank you. And I just want to talk about the flour rule in connection with religious obligations, that the best thing to do is talk to your religious advisor, your rabbi, your priest, talk to your sponsor. The amount you eat of flour in a religious obligation is minuscule. I would not eat matzah or communion bread or wafers as part of my food plan. But if it's consumed as part of a religious obligation, it doesn't mean it's somehow safe to eat. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue. Are there any questions for Sue?
This is Jan. May I play the devil's advocate here?
Yes, go ahead.
Jan, compulsive eater. I have heard, and I've heard it so many times and so many places, someone's committing their food and they're committing 8 ounces of a fruit. 8 ounces, you know, and it could be any fruit. And, you know, I question that if it's a sponsee or something, I'm like, whoa, where in forever abstinence does it say 8 ounces of fruit? There's only one fruit that is, it's given a weight, and that's papaya. I can eat 8 ounces of papaya or half a papaya, and that's the only one. But yet, people who I know have been doing this program as long or longer than myself are doing 8 ounces of fruit, and I question that. Is there anything that I might have missed?
Yeah, it's Thanks. In the measures. This is Sue. It's in the measures. That's where I found it. So on page 29, it gives equivalents. 1 cup equals 8 ounces equals 226.8 grams of food. So using that equivalent, I say
it does it distinguish between vegetable
fruit,
or fruit?
Because you can have fresh mixed fruit salad 1 cup. I say that's 8 ounces. That keeps me from eating the ginormous portions of fruit.
Okay, thank you for that.
Sure. And I know that some people will disagree, but this keeps me from playing with it. So I hit the I hit the 8 ounces. If I can't get 8 ounces, I go 7.9 because sometimes my scale won't settle. But I never go over 8 ounces.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Sue?
Yes, this is Michelle.
Go ahead, Michelle.
Oh, thank you, Suzanne. My question is this. I didn't even consider almond milk as something that was even legal on the program at all. And it sounded like maybe it was only eliminated as a protein. Can you clear up my confusion?
Sure. It actually, this is one area where the food plan is not clear, and potentially, you know, we could clarify it in the next edition. All it says is milk, and I've had sponsees call me and say, but it says, it just says milk, and this is milk. And I say, yes, but it's not a protein. So under the individualized measures for proteins, it says milk. And so a lot of people will eat cashew milk, almond milk, various kinds of milk that actually don't have any protein in them or have so little it's negligible. So in the spirit of abstinence, it isn't a protein. It might be something else. I don't know what it would be. Maybe it's a fat, but it's not milk. And you'll want to talk that over with your own sponsor.
Thank you, Sue. Any other questions? Any other questions for Sue? Sue, I had a question that two people asked me to address here about flour. They said, well, we can use almond flour or other flour as long as it's not wheat flour, right? So please address this if it's part of your share.
Sure. If it's flour, there are technical standards for flour as to the size of it, that it needs to be siftable by a certain, so the grains of the flour are a certain diameter, and so if it's labeled flour, you don't know if they just ground it into a meal, like a cornmeal, which we could have, or if they, like a corn tortilla is made from a cornmeal, or if they actually ground it to the level of a flour. And so my recommendation is, if it's flour, I believe they probably ground it to that really fine texture that's going to melt in your mouth and trigger you under the principle of vanishing caloric density. And I recommend people look up, that I sponsor, look up vanishing caloric density and see how it works. We are compulsive eaters. We are triggered by addictive foods. Flour foods are made addictive on purpose because they can sell them to us in large quantities because we eat them in large quantities. So I would avoid all flours because the vanishing caloric density applies to every flour. It applies to nut flours, vegetable flours, fruit flours, grain flours, and bean flours, every flour.
Thank you, Sue. Are there any other questions for Sue? Okay, our last speaker will be me. I'll be addressing the last appendix. And B, are you able to time me for 10 minutes?
Yes. How long do you need?
Give me 10 minutes when 10 minutes are up.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Well, first of all, I'm Suzanne, grateful compulsive eater, and I want to thank everybody who's been here so far. What a wonderful workshop. A couple of years ago at the intergroup level, we voted to ask for donations. So if you're listening to this, either live or on the recording, if you like the workshop, please send in a donation through your Seventh Tradition donation for the workshop. Whatever you think, I think $5 suggested would be great, or whatever you can would like to send in. So I'm going to address the last appendix and a couple other things. So at the front cover, the inside cover is the CA Health concept, and I'm at a disadvantage, which is maybe a good thing. So it talks about the concept, and when I hear that we think we are at a critical level, I qualify for that because I had tried other things, and I know that for me, and then it says, because we are at that level, we accept these tools and these concepts and the steps and traditions as requirements. And so I need that because left to my own devices, I've known about nutrition and a food plan similar list for years, but can I do it on my own? No. So self-knowledge availed me nothing or very, very, very little. So that concept is really important to hear. And that's why we hear it at every meeting because, as a compulsive eater, I'll just speak about myself. I have a great memory when it comes to this stuff, probably not so much. So I need to hear the concept at every meeting. And then moving on to the steps. Steps are so important, same thing. If I don't hear them at every meeting, I will forget them. And I can recite the steps now because I hear them so often, but if they're not there, recited at every meeting, I'll forget them. Traditions are important. They really, really are. And once, you know, we're at a certain level, we study those traditions, and it's now in the guidelines that we study the traditions and do the tradition questions after we finish the first 12 steps and before we get to maintenance, or once we get to maintenance and do the questions and we go to tradition questions. And it's so important. And once we've done all the steps, I think, I know for me, it was a new understanding and appreciation for the traditions because I need to apply them here, but I also apply them in my outside world, in my other part of my life. Very important. And then the tools. They're clear if I listen to them carefully. And I need the tools not just for my program, but to work in my life. If I want my life to work well, I have to do the tools. And it's not about being perfect. It's about spiritual progress, not perfection. I was at a meeting yesterday, and I was invited to be the speaker, and it was about 35 people. And I shared a lot about patience, and then I had to learn patience, to be patient with others, and helped me be patient with my mother. But it taught me patience for myself, patience for the progress that I'm getting here, patience to get to goal, just patience with myself. And that's what all these readings do for me. And we're lucky that here on the phone bridge, we have the four wraps in the booklet. If we need to read at a meeting, we grab it, and all the readings are there, the required readings anyway. And I like that it's all there. And we can grab that Forever Abstinent booklet and whenever we want to, whenever we need to. As I said at the beginning, the Forever Abstinent booklet will be updated again, 2019. It used to be, could be updated every year. And then some people don't understand who updates the Forever Abstinent booklet and who decides that and how does it get done. So it's a process. Anybody can submit a motion, either through your meeting, through your intergroup, through your area, or directly to World Service. There is an agenda committee. It has to meet criteria in order to be presented at the World Business Conference. It is then presented at the World Business Conference, which will take July. Well, this year will be July 18th, though we will not be voting on any food issues. It will be next year. So it will be during this business conference that will be presented any food changes, or any changes to the Forever Abstinent booklet. It doesn't have to be food. It could be there was the wording was changed on the medical abstinence part, and there was another page that was rewritten to make it easier to understand. So all those motions are voted on at the World Service Conference and are discussed and voted on, and then they get changed. And that's how it gets changed. It's not any one person, and it's discussed, and there is a process for that. And I wanted to share that with everybody. Sometimes people will say, oh, they reorganized they alphabetized the sugars. There were some sugars that were not in there, and they were added, and they were alphabetized to make it easier. There are new foods, or maybe not new foods, but foods that perhaps we haven't eaten traditionally, and that is now more widely available, and someone can submit a motion for that. I'll give an example. Rhubarb used to be just considered a fruit, but is now considered more a vegetable, and that change did happen a couple of years ago. So rhubarb is now a vegetable on the food plan. So all those changes happen, and so, about vegetarian and vegan, the same thing. If somebody wanted to submit a motion, they could do that, and like I said, you usually do it at your meeting level, your intergroup level, your area level, or a person could submit them directly to World Service at the business conference, the agenda committee. So I wanted to discuss that. I wanted to discuss also the other thing about reading the ingredients. Some of my fellows here will look only at the nutritional facts. And let's say, I'll give an example, oat bran. Well, there's natural sugar in oat bran. There's natural sugar in yogurt. So I look at that and I'll say, the sugar is there. We can't eat that. But I say, what's in the ingredient list? Well, no, it says here 2 grams of sugar is the sugar. We need to look at the ingredients because that's where the added sugar is. There, as I said, there are some foods that have sugar in it naturally. So we have to look at that, and that's always a reminder for me too, especially when I go to the supermarket and I depend upon others and I'll ask, you know, please read the ingredients, and they'll say, and they'll go down the list of nutritional facts, and they'll say, that's not the ingredients. And sometimes people will argue with me, and I'll say, oh, well, you're not used to reading this stuff, but that's not the right thing to be reading. It's the ingredients. And then I'll give them an example, and then they're like, oh, yeah, you're right. So that's important. If you're in this program, I don't know how people work it without the Forever Abstinent booklet, but along my years here, and I must say I've been abstinent 15 years continuously, that there are some people who work this program without the Forever Abstinent booklet. I don't know how they do that, but they do. And it's, well, my sponsor doesn't have it, so she just kind of dictated what her sponsor dictated to her. And for us, this is really, really vital that we have it. And it is important to keep up with the changes, and now we're lucky, it's not a change every year, it's every 3 years, because things do get added, things do get clarified, and sometimes things get simplified. So it is important that we get the current one, because what if we have a sponsee, and they get the current one, and they're talking about something, and we're like, well, that's not in the Forever Abstinent booklet, and we're adamant it's not there, and, well, you know, it is good to have the most current one. So those are the things I wanted to talk about, and, medical abstinence. The basic food plan here is wonderful for the vast majority of people. Some people may need a few changes. Some people may need to break up their meals, but that is really between their sponsor and their health professional. I recently had to change my food plan in the last year due to two health issues. And for me, consistency in eating certain things, the same, you know, same thing every day, was good for me and my structure. It worked wonderfully as a structure discipline. However, my body did not like it, and I came up with a lot of food sensitivities. So the good thing is, and I was told that for me, I have to have a lot of variety. And in a way, that's difficult because some of my foods have been taken away. And still, I'm working with someone. I have to do variety, and I can't do the same thing every day. So, as I said, for the vast majority of us, that works. It really does. However, if you are experiencing issues, sometimes you have to, the good thing is by the time we're to that point, we're listening to our body, we're detoxed. Listen to your body. I ignored the signs of my body. I just thought it was one of my health issues, and I just had to suck it up the rest of my life. However, I am grateful that I had the open-mindedness to listen to somebody outside a program that had an idea, and I thought, okay, I'm working the hell out of my program. I'm honest to know that it.
10 minutes are up.
Thank you. I'll finish. I was honest enough to know that I needed help. that I needed to change something. I have the open-mindedness to listen to somebody outside a program and the willingness to seek out outside help. So as I once said, this, you know, this food plan is wonderful. I eat from the food plan. I just have to do certain changes. So if you are having an issue, you might want to seek out medical professional help that could guide you through this. And so those are the issues I wanted to share on. And thank you for letting me share. Are there any questions of any one of our panelists before we close up?
Suzanne, it's Susan from New York. I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thanks for your presentation. You know, there's something on the SeeHow website that where people can actually join in, or if they have good experience, strength, and hope in a special area, such as a medical condition or diabetes, lactating, vegans, vegetarians, lactose intolerance, and there is something called special focus outreach. But if someone has a question and wants to get more information from someone who, say, is medical abstinence or pregnant or something like that, I can't find where that is on the website. So I was just wondering, do I just call WSO for that list, or am I missing something on the website?
I'm going to defer to Jan, but I know when the website got redesigned, something's got left off. Jan, do you have any information on that?
This is Jan. Truthfully, I don't, and that's a wonderful question. I know that on the, my understanding was always that we just asked WSO for the listing there, but it may be available now. I'm going to research that. Unfortunately, I won't have the answer before we finish, I don't think. But I'm going to try.
Thank you.
Hi. I'm going to do a quick interruption of the workshop. This is Roberta. I'm a compulsive eater, and I'm the one editing this workshop in order to get it loaded onto our website. It's been a few weeks now since this workshop was originally recorded, and so after hearing this last question, I called Jan just now to ask, so, were you ever able to get that question answered? And again, the question was, if anyone has any questions, how can they get connected with SeeHow members who have a special focus in areas like a medical condition such as diabetes, low blood pressure, lactating, etc., or an eating plan, meaning that they're vegan, vegetarian, lactose intolerant, etc. And Jan was able to confirm that yes, at least as of this recording, the correct process is to contact the SeeHow World Service Organization office in Los Angeles, and they can connect you with members that have volunteered to answer questions about these matters. Just so you have it, here is the contact information for our SeeHow World Service Organization office. Their phone number is area code 323-660-4333. The office hours Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday are 9:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Pacific, and on Thursdays 9:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Or you can email gso@seehow.org. And I'll spell that for you. It's GGeorgeSSamOcean@CEAHOW.org. And I'll now go back to continue on with our workshop.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Are the panelists allowed to leave their phone numbers for workshop?
We're going to do that after we stop the recording.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I have a question.
Yes.
This is Bea. I have a question. If you have a sponsee that has a medical abstinence and you're not familiar with that, how do you work that out? Do you need to get the medical suggestions, or do you need to request that the sponsee looks for someone who has experience as a with medical abstinence?
Bea, it's not, I mean, I... it's not necessary. I've heard it said it helps, but it's not necessary. I would get, as the Forever Abstinent booklet says and the sponsor guidelines, have that sponsee go to their medical professional and fill out what their needs are and send it to you. I don't know if anyone else wants to address that.
This is Jan.
Jan, go ahead.
My experience has been, first of all, on the area, a person should go see their medical professional to begin with, okay? And then on page 7 of Forever Abstinent, your healthcare professional needs to complete that area so the member has their needs written down in front of them. And anyone who is comfortable, there's no reason that anyone can't sponsor someone on medical abstinence. However, as long as they follow the food plan modifications that the physician has given, because the physician should be specific enough to do that. And so, you know, if the sponsor doesn't feel comfortable, that's okay. You know, they can refer that person to another medically abstinent sponsee or sponsor. I sponsor anyone, whether they're medically abstinent, whether they're they follow a different kind, you know, like vegan or vegetarian or whatever, you know, because as long as we follow the Forever Abstinent food plan in its true meaning, and within the guidelines, you know, then I can sponsor anyone. But you know, it's a personal choice too. If it's not required that we have a sponsor who is medically abstinent, in a nutshell.
Thank you, Jan. And just to expand on that, you know, it says we are food sponsors. It doesn't say we are vegan or raw vegan or vegetarian or whatever. We are food sponsors. And I have sponsored several people who are vegans, raw vegans, or vegetarians, and I'm none of those. So I'm a food sponsor. And, yeah, and if you're comfortable, but anybody can be can sponsor in a medical abstinence as long as they have the information. Did that help me? Okay.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I just have a suggestion to Dave.
Go ahead, Dave. And then who was the other person?
Adele. I have a question. This is Michelle.
Okay, first Dave and then Michelle. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, I just thought maybe for medical abstinence, some kind of half a page a referendum or addendum stating some caveats or guidelines, just general guidelines just to follow, that's all.
Such as?
Well, if you're hypertensive, no salt. Lactose intolerance, no milk. Just basic stuff that, what else? If you're taking heavy drugs, you might want to take, you bind it up, you need to take sugar-free Metamucil, et cetera. What else? I don't know. Can't think of it right now.
Okay. Well, I mean, I would just say, you know, it's ingredients. It's the same thing. Any medicine we take, we need to read the ingredients. I take a thyroid medication that doesn't have any fillers or sugars in them. So it's the same thing. And that stuff, you know, that's why we need to talk to our sponsors and our doctors about that. Would anyone else like to address that?
This is Sue from Las Vegas. I would agree with you, Suzanne. I don't think that medicine is food. However, if there's a sugar-free option, I would choose a sugar-free option.
Oh, yeah, because I can think of a couple of medications that someone used to, you know, down the whole bottle because it had sugar in it. So I think it is important. Yeah. Anyone else would like to expound on that, what Dave said?
This is Loretta from Ohio.
Hi, Loretta.
Hi. I take a number of medications, fortunately or unfortunately, and my sponsor before the one I have now was very insistent that I ask questions and find the most, the least offensive form of that medication I could take, like the generic form. Generic form, can I take, if they had too much sugar, can I take the regular form? Or she was very insistent, and that spoke to one of my character defects, which is being afraid to ask questions of authority. And so I hated that direction, but it was, I'm really glad she did it. It worked well for me, and I was grateful she did it, and it forced me to do something I didn't want to do. So that's my two cents.
Thank you, Loretta. Any other questions for any one of the panelists?
Just Vanessa, can I make a comment?
Who said, who wanted to do the comment?
Vanessa.
Vanessa, and who was the other person?
Jan. Go ahead, Vanessa.
Oh, this is Michelle again.
Michelle was first.
Oh,
I'm sorry,
Michelle
was first. Michelle, go ahead.
Is that for me?
Yes, Michelle, you're
okay,
first.
Yeah.
Because, yes, I forgot, sorry.
Covering food addicts, that's okay. Mine is a very simple question. What is the latest forever abstinence? Mine is printed 513. Are there going to be more changes that maybe I should wait until I get another forever abstinent book?
The latest one was 1216 was the last revision, and the next one will be next year.
Okay, I will wait. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Vanessa, you're next.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, it's really important to have the right edition, the current edition of Forever Abstinent, because my sponsor and I had she had an older edition, and it changed how you add maintenance foods. Hers was in order. Mine was picked from the list below. So that's a very big difference. So it's important to always have the current one. But the comment I really wanted to make was in regard to Dave's question, which is just my concern that, you know, I agree completely. If you have hypertension, you shouldn't have salt. But I also feel like that's not a see-how issue. And I really appreciate the traditions that we focus on our primary purpose. So it would make me uncomfortable to start offering anything in the way of medical advice with food, because I do think that's covered, you know, medically and, you know, on, you know, good health websites and that sort of thing. So let's keep it focused on the program. This is a wonderful book, and yep, that's what I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Vanessa. Jan, you're next.
Thank you, Suzanne. To go back to a previous question about the special focus outreach availability, what I have found is if you go on the website, the first thing is the home page has a pink menu banner, whatever they call them, and it says for members. And if you put your cursive on or your pointer on members, there are quite a few topics here, and the bottom is special focus outreach. And when I go there, tells me how to sign up to be a special focus outreach contact. And it's quite a process. We have to be screened, and, you know, we give all kinds of personal information. And then what it says in right under there, it says, once approved, your name and contact information will be added to the website's member outreach page. I haven't found that. So that's what we're looking for, is the member outreach page, and I'm still looking for it. I haven't found it yet. So that's just for anyone who wants to go looking. I'm doing a search now.
Jan, I heard something at the meeting yesterday that their World Service, I think it was World Service, is working on an electronic across-the-board outreach list for all of CA Health. Maybe that's why that's not there. I don't know.
Okay.
That's what I heard, yeah.
Okay.
But thank you, Jan, for that information. I'll go sign up. Anyone else with a question?
Yes, Suzanne, this is Michelle.
Yes, Michelle, go ahead. Sorry.
Thank you. Now I'm even more confused because you made a comment about the rhubarb that has been added to the vegetable list and taken off of the fruit list. And that isn't in my book. I've got an older book. That isn't in my book. But you were saying something about there are some new guidelines that take effect right away, and we didn't have to wait until the new book came out?
No. The last time that the Forever Abstinent booklet was changed was 2016. That was the last revision. The next revision will be next year at the business conference. Rhubarb was added, was it last year? Or the year before? Last revision.
Year before.
Year before. It was the last revision. Yeah, it was the last revision. It was added as a vegetable. And it wasn't that the guidelines have changed. I said the sugars, a couple of things were added and alphabetized to make it simpler. The medical abstinence thing was rewritten a little bit to make it easier to understand. And Jan, if there's something I'm missing here, please feel free to step in.
Yeah, I'll step right in. Thank you. First, to clarify, any policy or motion that is passed, that is approved during a particular World Service business conference becomes effective at the adjournment of that conference. And so anything that may have been changed last year would apply. However, it wouldn't show up in Forever Abstinent until that was republished. And to avoid having, you know, too many updated copies, you know, having to redo it every year, we had decided for efficiency and to make it more cost effective, we would only produce a new revision once every 3 years. But whatever was passed at the conference within that time, you know, in the interim, still is effective.
Okay, and, thank you. How do we find out what those revisions have been?
Okay, you can go to the website, and if you go to, I believe it's go to Service Bodies and World Service, and it'll say meeting minutes. Okay, and you click on meeting minutes, and anyone, any member has access to the minutes of any World Service business conference. You know, if you're lucky and you know someone.
Caroline, can I just interject also, though, that we are not voting on changes to Forever Abstinent now that this new process is in place. Changes to Forever Abstinent will only be entertained every 3 years also. So we're not voting on changes in between.
Yeah.
So, and then the 2019 WSBC will be voting on changes to Forever Abstinent, and then those changes will come out in a new release.
Thank you, Carolyn. Yeah, I was going to point that out, that Area 10 has a couple of motions, and they're not going to be even presented until next year.
Thank you. Thank you. I had totally forgotten about that. Thanks.
Okay. Michelle, does that answer your question? Thank you, Carolyn. Thank you, Jan.
Okay. I'd like to clarify in my own mind now. So there are some changes that were made before that determination about they're not going to be voting on anything new. So if we go back to the prior one, like prior to the
2016 was the last revision, so if you go back to the minutes of 2016, the changes that were voted on will be there if you don't have the most current Forever Abstinent booklet.
Thank you so much.
And one last clarification, rhubarb is listed as a vegetable in the 2016.
Yeah. That's when it was changed. Okay, any other questions? We're about ready to wrap this up.
Hi.
Hi, Fidel.
Hi, Adele.
Okay, it wasn't somebody I was sponsoring, but somebody had went to the doctor in the program, and the doctor told them that they could have, I can't remember how many glasses of wine a day, because they had had, I think, about 3 or 4 heart attacks at that time. So, I didn't touch it with a 10-foot pole because, you know, like I said, I wasn't sponsoring the person. Just another fellow member saying something to me, and I just didn't say anything. What would you guys say to that?
Well, okay, I have my take on that, but anybody would like to chime in on that who was on the panel, please? Any of the Susans? Yep, Jan, go ahead, and then I'll ask Susans if they want to chime in. Go ahead, Jan.
Okay. My understanding is if the medical changes do not adhere to forever abstinent and wine does not, then I cannot sponsor someone under those conditions, you know.
Yes. Any of the Susans or Sues that want to chime in?
This is Sue from Las Vegas.
Yes.
Wine has a lot of sugar in it, and it's not in our food plan. We abstain from alcohol. But I would say that there are many 12-step programs out there for compulsive eating, and that this program is not for them.
Thank you. All right. We have time for one quick question, maybe. I've got 2 minutes to 12. Okay. I think we'll close. We'll close with a serenity prayer, and then if anybody wants to stay on after for phone numbers for the panelists, we'll do that when the recording is stopped. I want to thank everybody, and thank you to our timekeeper, B, and let's close with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change.
Courage to change the things I can.
And wisdom to know the difference.
Thy will, not
your will, not mine, be done.
Thank you, everybody.